Hey there. Well, it looks like we're in chapter four of our little journey here into Epiphany. Hi, B.D. Harrell here, and thank you again for joining us. Before I get started on the this chapter here, I know it's later than I said would be. It's still Thursday, so I'm getting it in here, I guess. One of the images came up here in the first couple of paragraphs has to do with a bubbler that actually made its appearance at my grandfather's service station. He had an Esso station in a small town in West Virginia for a bunch of years until he decided, hey, I'm going to retire. And that was in the early 60s. One of the images, or one of my recalls of that, was that the machine that he was using to store the Coca-Cola bottles or the other soft drink bottles in the machine was chilled by ice water, and the ice water was available to somebody who would want to go and push the button on the side, and there's a little bubbler that would bring that ice cold well water from Fairview, West Virginia, up to a person's mouth so that that person could enjoy it. It was something that was part of my childhood. When my grandfather died back in, 1990, it was 1990, the pastor of the church that was holding the funeral for him mentioned in part of his eulogy that very same bubbler that he had in a service station some 30 years previous to that. And he had the same memory of that same bubbler. So it's interesting. It actually shows up in the story here. So without any further ado, chapter 4 of Epiphany. The idea of a sabbatical grew on Dan as he walked back to the parsonage. He struggled with it. Yes, he needed time alone, but no, he was overloaded with responsibilities. The notion went back and forth without any clear resolve. He deliberately went out of his way so he could stop at Pearl's, the antique shop purchased and run by his father-in-law, Ken Griswold. Dan's sons, Jacob and Peter, were there when he arrived, taking turns at the bubbler on one of the newer antiques. It was a soft drink case, the bottles cooled by a flow of water. The cooled water supplied a bubbler on the side of the case, which allowed everyone who wanted a free drink. "I found this little gem in a town in West Virginia," Ken told his son-in-law about the cooler. "It sat around in someone's gold garage for the better part of 50 years. We paid only $50 for it and spent another $200 restoring it. I already have a collector willing to pay me $1,000 cash, sight unseen." "You said in West Virginia?" Dan asked while he inspected the machine. "Just outside of Davis on the way up to the ski resort. That's where Emmy..." Ken cut himself short. "That's where Emmy did what, Dad?" Ken's face reddened just a bit. He suggested that the boys go outside for a while, then pulled Dan aside over by the roll-top desk where he conducted most of his business. "May as well tell you, but you didn't hear it from me," he confided. "Emily and that reporter woman, Mrs. Michaels, are arranging a little vacation for you." "Well, I just talked with Patricia Michaels a few minutes ago," Dan assured him. "Actually, I came here to see what you thought of the idea." "I suggested the where," Ken told him. "Emily told me a few months back that you were losing focus and asked for suggestions about what we should do. I told her you needed to get away. Away from here, the church, the family, everything." If there was one thing Dan knew he could count on, it was that his father-in-law would be straightforward with him. The only difficulty Dan ever had with Ken Griswold was when Dan eloped with his daughter the morning after they met. The relationship between the men was strained for all of 3 days because of the elopement. "So I guess I'm expected to go alone," Dan surmised. "You could take a good book or two, maybe your hiking boots, but for all intents and purposes, you will go alone. Your old roommate, Don Gooding, will be your host. He has a cabin tacked on a corner of a piece of land maybe 500 feet from a hiking trail leading to Blackwater Falls. Should be nice and quiet up there." Dan's face lit up. How did you know about Don? Well, Emmy said something about a year or so ago. When I was going to get the cooler, I dropped by and introduced myself. Jacob, Peter, and another boy, Kevin Peel, drifted back into the store. Can we have some ski? Peter asked his father. May we have some ski? And yes, you may, Dan corrected his son. Each of the boys fished out a bottle of soft drink and took it outside. Dan insisted on paying for the drinks. Them sitting out there with the drinks will draw more people inside, hot as it is, Ken pointed out. Besides, they're my grandsons. I get to spoil them any way I please. It wasn't long before Ken's prediction came true. Soon he was doing a land office business, selling soft drinks in between snippets of conversation about Dan's impending trip. Dan Stevens, sometimes you are just impossible, Emily Stevens declared when Dan came walking through the door. I've been planning a getaway for you this past week and a half, and Tricia Michaels tells me that you know about my surprise. Harold and I were just talking about the impossibility of keeping a secret in a small town like this, he told his wife after giving her a kiss. Their eyes and ears everywhere. As if on cue, the youngest Stevens daughter, Hope, came toddling into the room, followed closely by her older sister, Gracie. Hope lit up at the sight of her father, holding her arms up toward him, silently asking him to pick her up. Of course he did her bidding, much to her delight. Gracie and her companion, Frank the dog, both wanted attention as well, something Dan found hard to refuse. Are you going to be okay with the kids when I'm gone? Dan asked after the girls drifted off to play in the backyard with Frank. If I wasn't going to be okay, I wouldn't have made plans to send you away. Emily tried to give her husband the sternest look she could give him, but ended up not being able to keep that look for long. Can we talk about this after lunch? He asked. If I can get Hope down for a nap, sure, she said, but I have a lot on my plate this afternoon. I need to drive down to Portsmouth to do some research at the college library. Kevin's mom said she'd stay here and look after things until I got back. Well, in that case, I only have one question, Dan said. When do I leave? He knew that once Emily had made plans, he would have a hard time dissuading her from changing them. Right after morning service a Sunday, she told him. I've worked it out with the worship team for Sunday night, Wednesday, and all of next Sunday. Emma and Kevin will stay here to help with the kids. Mom and Dad said they'd help when they could. There's no need to worry about a thing. The woman has spoken, Dan thought. Thank you, he told her, pulling her close to him and giving her another kiss. Packing for a trip for a man involves little more than making sure there's plenty of clean underwear, shirts, socks, and not much else. Emily insisted that Dan use a suitcase, for appearance sake, if nothing else. He grudgingly complied with his wife's wishes. Packing with both of his daughters running in and out of the room provided to be a daunting task. Gracie had more questions than he could have answered by an encyclopedia, while Hope kept wanting to be picked up. Sunday morning services at the high school went smoothly enough. Sam Davis did as well as he could with the out-of-tune piano, while the congregation did the best they could without their songbooks. Some of the lyrics got mangled, but the feeling was there. That was what was important. Dan mentioned his impending departure as part of the announcements. I know the worship team can handle things in my absence, he told his flock. Just remember that God loves you and will take care of you. A slight twinge flowed through him at his mention of God. His internal struggles were back. His faith was being tested. He knew that for sure when the service was over and he saw Vera May sitting out in her car in the front parking lot. She gave him a mean look. He was sure that she would be back to cause trouble the following Sunday before he could get back. He had a word with the worship team before walking home to finish packing and having lunch before heading out. Vera May must be up to something, Dan told Steve Mulligan. Keep a close eye on her, will you? Lunch consisted of ham sandwiches and light conversation. The Griswolds joined them along with Emma Wyndham, her son, Kevin Peel, and Jacqueline Roberts. Jacqueline was marginally Jacob's friend. She had just turned 13 and was intent on making Jacob her first boyfriend. For his part, Jacob treated Jacqueline like one of the boys, ignoring her when he pleased. She stayed with him for a good part of the summer so far. Goodbye was relatively short and sweet. Dan changed into a t-shirt he'd gotten by donating blood to a Red Cross and a pair of slacks. He and Emily tarried just a bit inside while everyone else gathered on the front porch, ready to wave him along his way. 2:15 with a 5-hour drive ahead of him. Dan drove to the end of the block, then turned east. 30 seconds after he was out of sight, a green Honda Civic drove up. Emily smiled. Gracie ran to greet their friend. Debbie Wallace had just come home from college. Next week we'll be meeting Debbie a little bit more. She was mentioned in the Magnolia Chronicles. Actually, her story was one of the Magnolia Chronicles. We do have a story involving Debbie embedded in this particular book. That's really about it. Been a busy week. It's actually been a busy morning for myself today. I had some things straightened out. Had the theft of an automobile to worry about, and that's been resolved. Also have other things to worry about as well, including getting back a bicycle, which has been a companion of mine for over 30 years, and being cleaned up and made real nice in there. Nothing else really to say. We will be back next Thursday, as usual, with another portion of the story. We'll be going to Chapter 5, and looking forward to doing it. In the meantime, I'm B.D. Harrell, author, and savoir faire, whatever. Be seeing you.